Mickley and Marotta mornings. Arizona Sports, the local sports leader. Mickley Blast.
The Devin and Kevin show hasn't always been a smashing success. The fear is that the current postseason might stamp it as a colossal failure, and that would be a calamity on many levels. This new narrative is courtesy of Booker's benign performance in Game 1, where he was 5 of 18 from the field, where he was swallowed up by a pair of relatively unknown defenders, where he once again seemed to place some of the blame on officiating. It's also courtesy of Durant, smiling while Anthony Edwards was lighting him up verbally, saying things you would never say to your elders. Book afterwards seemed nonplussed again, saying, "It's just a series." Durant was exactly the same, saying, "It's just hoops." I understand that these two stars don't like the emotional stuff, that they'd rather eat lint than show how much they really care on a basketball court, but on the inside, they better be fuming, because at the moment, the Suns are back on the grill, once again getting skewered by the national media. Book is in danger of losing status points on his way to becoming legendary. And Colin Cowherd just said that KD is on the verge of becoming irrelevant. Now, I don't know about all that, but tonight, I want to see more than two great basketball players leading the way for the Suns. I want to see two angry, hungry, passionate superstars who are coming for a W and a pair of V's, victory and vengeance. All right, today's Bickley Blast brought to you by my great friends at Chapman BMW, who make luxury attainable. Find them online at chapmanbmw.com.
I mean, we had it going. I think, you know, the game got lost in the last 5-6 minutes of the third quarter where things domino effect. But, you know, if I'm not making shots and my teammates are, you know, I'm not opposed to that either. You know, games don't go as noticed as that if we win the game and I have a 5 for 15 or 5 for 16. So, you know, it's not my opportunity. I mean, it's not my job out there to just make sure I have an efficient, great night. You know, I'm trying to do everything on the floor to win the game.
How was Devin Booker at practice yesterday? I like that mindset. Look, winning is the most important thing, not an efficient stat line. He was very inefficient.
Yep.
And it wasn't all on him. It wasn't just a bad shooting day for Devin Booker. He was forced into a lot of really tough shots. He had defenders draped on him. He talked, like you said, about the physicality and finding the balance. And this is one of the quotes from Devin Booker that people are talking about, is finding that balance between, you know, being dealt with physically by the defense, but also trying to do that on the defensive end himself.
Yeah, I mean, that's a tough balance where I'm trying to, you know, find too, you know, where guys are being physical with me, and the moment I'm physical with them, I'm in foul trouble and on the bench. I look back at my second and third one, the pass underneath that Mike tried to make that I stole cleanly, and then the trap on Carl, which was initially called on Brad and then changed to me. But it's a physical game, so it's trying to find what they're going to call and what they're not when guys are being physical with you and you try to return them.
The point that he makes there on the second foul, that's the one that stood out to me. I was one of those people that threw my arms up when they called that foul, because at that point it was getting physical. And that's what the frustration is for Devin Booker and every NBA player, is this thought, and it's true. The officiating has changed since the All-Star break. Mm-hmm. They're letting a lot more go. Mm-hmm. I think you've seen that ramped up in the physical play. I mean, the first two games of the Philly-New York series, man, they're going at it. Mm-hmm. You can't call everything. But when a ticky-tack foul is called, that can throw you off. Mm-hmm. And I think that threw off Devin Booker to a degree. That second foul, he reached in, he got the ball from Conley, they called the foul, he had an incredulous look on his face. That was number two. Later on in the half, he got that third foul and had to sit for the last 2.5 minutes. Not an excuse. You got to overcome that.
Right, that's my point.
Now, the frustration is there. It will be there,
and
certainly,
it will be there
will be there tonight, too. Mm-hmm. But overcoming that frustration and playing your basketball game is what you need to do.
Listen, no one is arguing that these refs can drive you insane.
Oh,
I think we all realize that. But what you have to do, that sounds like a broken record here, is get over the top of it. Yeah, if you get saddled with a ticky-tack call, get over it. Get back to the business of playing basketball at the highest level possible. So, and again, so these two guys can on the exterior, they can be as nonchalant as they choose to be. I just really hope on the inside that both these guys are really ticked off. The way Anthony Davis was when he threw the mic down after last night's game. Now, you don't have to show me the histrionics. I don't need that. But I would like to see tonight an appropriate response to everything that went down in game one. That's what I would like to see. Because part of what Stephen A. Smith said is that this team came for you in the third quarter and you didn't really stop them. It's easy to say something like that when a game turns the way that game turned, but what you can do now is make sure that this next game doesn't go like that.
Yep.
That's what I want to see from the Suns.
And this isn't all a Devin Booker proposition. Mm-hmm. Devin Booker's got to be better. A lot of people need to be better. Bradley Beal needs to be better. Bradley Beal was the talk of the Phoenix Suns heading into the playoffs because he was that emotional lightning rod for this team. He was setting the example with his play and his efficiency and his shooting numbers, and he kind of had a quiet night. Not a bad night, but a quiet game one against Minnesota. Stephen A. Smith is pointing at both of those guys to step it up.
When Devin Booker can't even give you 20 points in the game, and I don't think that'll last, because you know I believe in Book, he can come back on, but if he doesn't bring his A game, Phoenix has no chance. And Bradley Beal, you ain't been relevant for years because you were stuck in purgatory in the nation's capital. We thought the politicians were what made it into a swamp. Well, the Wizards didn't exactly, you know, fail to contribute to that, okay? So you were there. And now to be in Phoenix, your first playoff game, 15 points. Now we expect more from Bradley Beal. This is supposed to be a big three. There was a one who showed up, and he wasn't enough to offset what Anthony Edwards gave to you.
I agree. And when you talk about what could be a marginalized, you know, roster of role players, Grayson Allen, he might play tonight. I think he will play. That tough.
Okay.
But is he going to be his normal self? He was not good in game one before the ankle injury. He's going to be marginalized. You know, what can you count on Eric Gordon? Frank Vogel had the quote after game one. Look, Eric Gordon is that kind of guy. You can go 0-for-5 and then go 5-for-5 the next game. That was Eric Gordon's sixth game this year of attempting at least 1-3 and not making any. When he bounces back, the next game he's shooting 36% from 3-point range. So, but he has gone two straight games now without making a three. He's missed 9 in a row.
Wow.
He's going to break out at some point, but you can't count on it. So I agree with Stephen A. Smith's point. Big three, remember the 75-point threshold we talked about? It's the playoffs. You might need 80 tonight from those guys. And even in an off game, they combined for 64 the other day.
Right.
Not nearly enough. You might need 80 points from those three tonight if you want to win this game.
Everything you said, I agree with. They need somebody other than the big three to step up and do something productive. I would hope it'd be Eric Gordon, especially if Grayson Allen is marginalized. Maybe it's Royce O'Neal. Maybe it, well, I won't say Bull.
O'Neal.
Yeah. I hope that you can feel the heat coming off KD and Book tonight. That's what I want. You don't have to say nothing to me, but I want to feel it.
You can text your thoughts to the FanDuel text line. It's open at 620-620 right now. Also want to remind you, Suns playoffs are here. You can go all in with Arizona Sports. Tune in sometime today in the 8 o'clock hour, the noon hour, and the 3 p.m. hour to snag our exclusive Phoenix Suns code word. Text that word to 620-620 after you hear it for your shot at scoring Suns playoff tickets again during this hour. The noon hour and 3 o'clock today is when you can track down that Phoenix Suns playoff code word. Coming up next, we'll continue to talk playoffs from the Minnesota standpoint. John Krasinski covers the T-Wolves for The Athletic. He will join us next here on Bickley and Murata Mornings, Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Hey, it's Luke. Game one wasn't what we expected from the Phoenix Suns, so will they be able to get it together for game two? We're getting you ready for Suns Timberwolves at 10 a.m. It's Wolf and Luke on Arizona Sports.
Yeah, Suns try to even things up against the T-Wolves tonight at Target Center after Minnesota took game one by 25 points. Here to give us the Minnesota perspective, senior writer for The Athletic, covers the Vikings and the Timberwolves, John Krasinski, is our guest here on the Arizona Sports Line. John, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, good morning, guys. How's it going?
Good. Going into this series, from our perspective here in Arizona, we didn't really pick up on a whole lot of civic confidence in the Timberwolves. Going into this series, based on how the three games against the Suns had gone, we saw what happened Saturday. How would you rate the civic confidence going into game two after what the T-Wolves put out there, John?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the civic confidence isn't just about the three games in the regular season. It's about 35 years of general Timberwolves dysfunction and malaise. So I do think that this team, I think that the Timberwolves needed game one more than Phoenix did. And so to see the Wolves play as well as they did in game one and really kind of handle the Suns certainly has raised the confidence level of the community around here that, hey, maybe this team really can make this happen and go to the next round. They've only been in the second round one other time in their existence. So they're fighting a lot of demons. I still think that until they actually do it and win four games, there's going to be kind of a cynicism and a waiting for the other shoe to drop. But certainly going into tonight's game, the level of nerves and confidence is much cooler now than it was going into game one, when everyone was like, oh man, we are, you know, we're bracing for a, you know, a punch in the mouth.
Yeah, I agree with you. The T-Wolves did need that more than the Suns. I think it's a very apt summation of game one. Anthony Edwards also needed that. He had not had a lot of success against Devin Booker or Bradley Beal or the Suns, for that matter. What is the aftermath of that? And is there a feeling now that he is unlocked against this team, that he has found the code against this team?
Yeah, I mean, it certainly was a big step for him. Now, I would say that of all the players on this team that the Timberwolves have, and when it comes to expectations of playing well in the playoffs, Anthony Edwards is at the top of the list. He's been terrific in his first two series, you know, as his second year and his third year in the league. And so he seems to be able to rise to the occasion. But certainly when you juxtapose that against, you know, averaging 14 points a game, he took seven shots against the Suns on in the regular season finale, there was a question about how is he going to generate offense for himself, because it was clear that Phoenix was really, their game plan was, we are going to just double and triple Anthony Edwards and make other people beat us. And so what Ant has to do is walk the line of being patient, not forcing things, and not turning the ball over when he's looking for his own shot and finding other people, but also being in a position where he can be aggressive and he can absolutely, you know, knock down the big threes that he did in game one and that sort of thing. So I think that the way that he played the game, the maturity, the decision making for a fourth year guy, 22-year-old, I think was exceptional. And I do think it gave him a bit of a blueprint going forward for how to attack the Suns.
John Krasinski, who covers the T-Wolves for The Athletic, is our guest here on the Arizona Sports Line. We talked briefly yesterday, John, about your piece that you did on Mike Conley, the silent veteran leader of the T-Wolves. Really enjoyed the piece, but him stepping up after that that regular season beatdown that the Suns gave the T-Wolves and saying, hey, do this for me. I don't have that much more time left. And I thought it was really poignant after watching the way things unfolded, because that looked like a much more emotionally connected team in game one. I guess my question to you is, how much battery life do you think that that has going into game two? Or was that more of a game one phenomenon?
Well, I certainly think that what Mike recognized, you know, he made those comments to his team coming out of the wipeout and the regular season finale. And so I do think that he looked at it and said, this is a group that needs like a bit of a wake-up call. And I think that he understands that this team is incredibly talented and that he doesn't want it to go to waste. And so he felt like, for the first time since he really came to this team, that it was time to make, you know, do more than lead by example, to ask something of these guys. He has a bunch of equity built up. And so I think it was very effective and the timing was perfect for him. And it gave them the boost into game one. I don't think it's a thing that's going to really carry over throughout the series as much. I think that was a, you know, one bullet you fire to kind of get the team refocused and energized. And now it's really up to the group in general to just handle things professionally, to keep that intensity and keep going forward. There's only so many rah-rah speeches you can give, for a team. And I think that one injected belief and focus into this group. And now that's just that confidence has to carry over sort of naturally going forward.
The defensive job Jaden McDaniels did along with Nikhil Alexander Walker on Devin Booker obviously was paramount in game one. Is he that good of a defensive stopper? What do you think that the Suns are going to do to kind of unlock Book the way that the T-Wolves did with AE in game one?
Yeah, I mean, number one, yes, Jaden McDaniels and Nikhil Alexander Walker are both terrific perimeter defenders. Like, I think that for people around the league who are going to be tuning into the playoffs for the first time and watching the Timberwolves for the first time, maybe haven't really spent a whole lot of attention paying to Minnesota for the regular season, they're going to look at it and say, wow, like, I didn't realize that these guys could do this, when actually that's what they've been doing all year long. The two of them are two of the best at navigating screens that you're going to find in the league. Like, they do not get hung up on screens. They get through them. They make it very difficult for the guys that they are guarding to get clean looks. And so Devin Booker is going to face one or the other for 48 minutes or forever, however long he is on the floor. And so it is a tremendous challenge. That said, Book is one of the best tough shot makers in the league. I do not expect him to go 5 for 16 again. I do think that the Timberwolves strategy seems to be, at least it was in game one, that, hey, look, we don't have an answer for Kevin Durant. There's just nobody that's going to be able to guard him to a degree where you keep him on, 20 points or under. So maybe the key is to single coverage KD as much as possible. If he scores, he scores. That's going to happen. What the Wolves cannot do is let Devin Booker and Bradley Beal or Grayson Allen, a combination of those guys, go off and get hot and get comfortable. And that's what they did too often in the regular season. And so I think they devoted a lot more of their resources to trying to make things much more difficult for Bradley Beal and Devin Booker. I'm sure they will shoot better. I'm sure they will have better success going forward, but I also think that it's a sustainable approach defensively, just to try to make things really hard on those guys and make them work for what they can get.
John, before we let you go, both teams have been affected by injury already. Grayson Allen questionable for the Suns. On the Minnesota side, Kyle Anderson was so reliable off the bench. He was a 22-minute player for 79 games. He only plays 4-plus minutes, leaves with the hip pointer. If he can't go tonight or for the rest of the series, how big of a loss is that, and how do they overcome that?
I mean, it certainly would be a big loss. He is very important to them as an offensive playmaker and as a defender, especially he is a guy that you figure was going to get plenty of time on Kevin Durant throughout this series. But I do think that if there is a separator between the Timberwolves and the Suns in this series, it's the depth. And so we saw in game one, when Kyle Anderson was not able to play, you just play Naz Reid more minutes, you play Nikhil Alexander Walker more minutes, and Chris Finch has more options to go to be effective, to find things that'll work for a Kyle Anderson injury. Then, frankly, I think what Frank Vogel has, if Grayson Allen can't play. If Grayson Allen can't play, I think the Suns are in real trouble, because Allen was so big for them in the regular season, hitting open shots, not just threes, but getting to the basket a little bit, mid-rangers. And if it's Eric Gordon getting the bulk of those minutes, I mean, I think there's just a huge drop-off there. And so I think the Wolves are equipped to handle a Kyle Anderson injury. I'm not so confident in what the Suns could do without Grayson Allen.
John, great stuff. Thanks so much for joining us today. We really appreciate the insight.
You got it. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. John Krasinski covers the T-Wolves for The Athletic. He joined us here on the Arizona Sports Line. Coming up next, after a lackluster first couple of days of the NBA playoffs, did the league have a good night and an exciting night last night? We'll get into some of it next. It's Bickley and Murata Mornings here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Arizona Sports, all in for the Suns in the playoffs.
That is right, Suns fans. It's time to give you our code word for today. Your Suns playoff code word for the day is foul. F-O-U-L, as in,
boy.
Stop crying about all the fouls. Text foul, F-O-U-L, to 62620 right now. Enter your info, and you could be heading to a Suns home playoff game. Wolf and Luke will have another code word for you to take advantage of in the noon hour for your next Suns code word. Again, our code word today is foul. Text that to 62620 right now.
At the midcourt circle. 4 seconds. 3 seconds left. Why are they not fouling? Jumper Murray. Got it to Hard. Denver bounced the comeback. They come back from 20 points down. They win game number two. 101 to 99 is the final.
That's the way Jamal Murray's game winner in game two for the Nuggets sounded on their radio station. I always like to hear the flip side of it. You want to hear what it sounded like on ESPN LA?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Here's John Ireland.
Here come the Nuggets with a chance to win it. No timeout. 10 seconds remaining. Game tied at 99. Jamal Murray's got it. 5 seconds left. Murray dribbles right. 3, 2, Murray for the win. Good. Nuggets win it.
pretty different approach.
Right,
there.
Exactly.
What do you expect, John? A total pro. What a game last night.
It was unbelievable.
The Lakers had a 20-point lead. The Nuggets turned it on in the second half. They come back from 20. They tied it three times in the last minute 15 without taking the lead. That was the first lead they had taken in that stretch, and it comes on the last shot of the game. And you heard the Denver announcer say, why aren't they fouling? The Lakers had a foul to give. Didn't do it. And you see the result. Not saying that they should have. I'm not a huge fan of that, especially when a team has no timeouts and they're kind of devising something on the fly.
Yeah.
Why let the defense get set?
And listen, you had Anthony Davis on Jamal Murray, and if you watch the side camera of Jamal Murray, literally jumps backwards to create separate, jumps himself basically out of bounds after he shot the ball. So the degree of difficulty on that shot was very, very high.
Yeah.
So that's one of those things where, here you go, horrible sports cliche.
Yeah.
You tip the proverbial cap. The fact that you were in that position in the first place is what the Lakers have to reconcile.
Yeah. I misspoke too. I said, if the Lakers choose the foul, you let the offense get organized. And Denver's a great half-court offensive team, so I didn't have a problem with them not fouling.
Yeah, no, me neither.
Jamal Murray didn't have the best of nights. Nikola Jokic said it after the game. He missed all the easy ones and made the tough one. But he talked about his teammates still encouraging him to shoot.
Man, all the credit to my teammates. You know, there's a point in the game, I forget when it was, I think it was around the end of third, fourth, and I had missed a couple. And I was like, man, I'm looking for you guys to just relocate, just whatever the game plan was. I was looking to find guys, and every single one of them told me to shoot it. I mean, it's amazing to be on a team where you play 40 minutes and you're shooting awful. The ball's in your hand a lot of the time, and a lot of the openings are for you to step up and make some shots. So to miss, you know, like I said, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, damn near 14, I don't know how many it was in a row, for all of them to tell me to keep shooting and none of them ever wavered in confidence in me hitting a shot is, you know, I think pretty special. And then that's what really kept me shooting.
You say it all the time, basing what you say on Torrey Lovello's stance, a connected team is a dangerous team.
Right.
There's no more connected team than the Denver Nuggets.
I agree with that. I think that's pretty evident. Yeah.
And on the flip side
just utter clarity and role definition and what people are supposed to do. And
And the Lakers played a pretty good basketball game.
They
played pretty good in this series. They're down 0-2, headed home now to Crypto.com arena for the next two games. But they got to be thinking to themselves, what do we have to do to beat the Nuggets in the playoffs? Last year, they get swept in the Western Conference Finals. They lose the first two. I think the average margin of victory in those six games is 6 points.
Mm.
So they've been right there, toe-to-toe with the Nuggets, and just can't make that one play.
I know.
To get over the top. And you mentioned it earlier. LeBron James had a wide-open look from three-point range that probably ices it for the Lakers. There was not anybody within 10 feet of him.
Mm-hmm.
And it rimmed in and rimmed out. And that was his explanation. Look, sometimes shots go in, sometimes they don't.
It's a make or miss league, Vinny.
It is a make or miss league. It's also a league of runs.
Right. But also, when you're talking about the greatest of all time, you've got to make that shot. You're wide open at the top of the key. You've got to will that ball into the basket. That's what the great players do. And LeBron was otherwise terrific. I thought Anthony Davis in the first half was the best I've ever seen him play. He was taking Nikola Jokic's lunch money.
But how about Jokic at the end of the night, a 20-20-10 game?
Ah, I know. Right, it just never ends.
Yeah.
And he's got that great commercial with the, what are those things called?
The Minions.
The Minions.
The Minions.
Yeah.
What, did you see him dress up as Gru?
Oh, it's fantastic. On his way in? Oh, yeah.
I mean, that happens and you're like, okay, are they just... high on the are they happy on the farm now because they're the champions? He's really dressing as a cartoon character before game one of the playoffs. It doesn't matter.
Nikola Jokic probably is literally happy on the farm.
Yes.
Happier. He's happier on the farm.
It's literal with him. It's not metaphoric with
also,
him.
Also, without even the costume, 90% looks like Gru anyway.
Yeah.
He doesn't have to do a lot to transform into it.
It's a great commercial.
The frame is already there.
Just add the scarf.
Right.
That's all you have to do. I know.
Home teams, 11-0 so far to start things out.
Yeah.
Three games on the schedule tonight, including Suns, Timberwolves. The question to you, Dan Bickley, does a home team break or a road team break through tonight? Suns, Indiana, or Dallas? Can any one of those win tonight? Or how would you rank their chances?
You've got to...
Dallas was truly awful on Sunday.
Yeah, Dallas. I think Dallas and Phoenix have very good shots to do this. I'm not sure about Indiana. Indiana came into into the postseason kind of rolling hot, and we were all kind of doubting on the Bucks, and then Damian just went nuclear in that first half.
Giannis,
so I don't know.
Is Giannis out again?
I think he's still questionable.
Because if he's out, I predict all three road teams win tonight.
Ooh, okay.
Wow.
He is doubtful tonight.
Doubtful?
Yes.
Yeah, that's probably a sign of things to come. Especially since they're up one. If they're up 2-0, they're going to take their time. But
oh, absolutely.
Indiana's one of those teams that everybody was paying attention to before the All-Star break.
Yep.
They're just kind of, I don't know. They're a nice team. They're fun to watch. I don't take them as a serious threat. Playoff basketball in the works for tonight. 4:30 Suns and T-Wolves. 3:30 pregame. Tim Ring gets it kicked off here on Arizona Sports on 98.7 and the Arizona Sports app. Not only do we have playoff basketball, we got the NFL draft 2 days away. We'll give you some of the latest developments on the draft front next. It's Bickley and Marotta Mornings here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Hey, it's Wolf. It's officially NFL Draft Week. So how much can change for the Arizona Cardinals by Thursday night? We get going at 10 a.m. It's Wolf and Luke on Arizona Sports.
Seems to me one of those instances where need meets talent meets the value proposition. I think Harrison Jr. is as close to a can't-miss prospect as it gets. He is not scheme dependent at all. He is like a wide receiver built in a lab that you can just line up and tell to go win week after week after week. And those receivers, that type, that profile of receiver, Laura, they're making over $25 million a year. So to be able to get a player like that with the level of conviction I believe they should have in him, knowing that you're saving that kind of money, it just seems like a no-brainer, especially given all the draft capital they have this year.
It's Mina Kimes, ESPN's NFL Live, talking about Marvin Harrison Jr., his fit with the Arizona Cardinals. A receiver made in a lab. We shared some dissenting opinions earlier in the show, the piece that Bruce Feldman had out on The Athletic today saying, look, a lot of teams don't have Marvin Harrison Jr. as their number one receiver. A lot of people are on the Malik Nabers train. A lot of teams reportedly big fans of Rome Odunze. The consensus is those three are all really good. But
yeah.
But the pecking order, the preference order seems to vary. Now we got to wonder if the Cardinals are staying at four, what is Monty Ossenfort's preference?
Right.
Or is he going to trade out of four?
Yeah, I still think the odds of that are pretty good depending on what goes down in front of them. I continue to hear people say that this might be the craziest scenario of an NFL draft that they've ever seen. I recall certainly hearing that before. And there was a time a couple months ago when it was like, oh, these first 10 picks, everyone knows what it's going to be. And then suddenly all the quarterbacks began to flip.
Yes.
And then the wide receivers now apparently it's what flavor do you choose?
Yeah, it's a lot of that. What flavor do you choose?
Oh, yeah.
Look, I thought going into this,
And I was wrong that the Caleb Williams difficulty factor would be pegged.
Yeah,
like
so
Caleb
did I.
Williams would not want to play for the Chicago Bears. That seems to be fait accompli. That's going to happen very early in the proceedings on Thursday, is that the Bears are going to draft Caleb Williams. I don't know what Washington's doing at 2. I don't know what the Patriots are thinking at 3.
Nope.
Certainly don't know what the Cardinals are thinking at 4. And a lot of it depends on how those 3 picks in front of the Cardinals unfold. But I think it's a great amount of mystery, which I think makes for a much more fun draft night for everybody.
I think the Cardinals have a couple of obligations. Number one, they have to know which wide receiver they prefer. So you've got to be willing to make that pick at 4 if the phone isn't ringing, or you are not getting the kind of offers you think you should get for the 4th overall pick. Because as we've discussed, there are scenarios where where a team willing or looking to get quarterback number 4 might not have to deal with the Cardinals. You might just have to deal with the Chargers. That's
the thing, is how do the Cardinals, if they do want to trade, how do they make their pick seem more appealing than just
you gotta have calling their bluff, right?
And, well, no, we'll go to 5 instead.
Like, okay, for instance, if suddenly the quarterbacks go Caleb Williams, and then say Washington goes Drake May, and then say New England goes J.J. McCarthy, and now you're sitting there, now the Raiders might be getting involved for the Jaden Daniels piece, along with the Vikings, maybe the Giants. If it's J.J. McCarthy who's available, maybe it's the Giants and the Vikings. You're going to have multiple suitors for you to have the leverage at 4. If there's only one, that team can play the bluff game and deal with somebody else.
Yeah, but are the Raiders a team that is willing to spend a lot of draft capital, one of those big time hauls to move up from 13. It's interesting you painted that scenario. Pro Football Focus has a new mock draft out today. The PFF analyst 7-round mock draft. So they got Williams going number 1 to Chicago. They've got Drake May going number 2 to Washington. They have the Denver Broncos as the team moving up to number 3 to take Jaden Daniels. Now, the Denver Broncos yesterday made a move for a quarterback. They got rid of one Wilson, and they're bringing in a lesser Wilson.
How about it? Yeah, and that's really got to be, they're just taking a flyer on this because they gave up very little to get him.
Yeah.
But you give up a 6, you get a 7 back, and you get the quarterback.
Which, they got very little back.
Yeah.
They gave up very little, and they got very little back. I don't think Zach Wilson is salvageable at this point.
No.
But you're going into a season right now before the draft, if you're Denver, with Zach Wilson and Jarrett Stidham.
Shut up, Jarrett Stidham.
I don't think that would necessarily make you confident about things.
No.
So maybe they're the team that moves up. In this mock draft, they've got Marvin Harrison going number 4 to the Cardinals. They stay put. They don't rearrange any of their first round picks. They've also got Chop Robinson, the edge defender, out of Penn State, going to the Cardinals at number 27.
I think a lot of Cardinal fans, if you said you're going to get Marvin Harrison Jr. or one of these wide receivers and Chop Robinson, I think they'd go, that's a good first round.
Yeah. 2 areas of need.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, this is going to be interesting because, again, I don't know if this is still the case. I was told a while back that Sean Payton loves Bo Nix. Loves him. But Sean Payton is also the guy that, you know, that loves to produce the guy that Taysom Hill, right? You don't have to look anywhere beyond that.
But he also had Drew Brees.
So, yeah, and so the Raiders and their affinity for Jaden Daniels, and it's taken flight because, of course, Antonio Pierce and his relationship with Jaden Daniels in Tempe. That kind of says a lot, that a guy that was around Jaden Daniels during his formative years is allegedly that in on him as an NFL quarterback.
Yeah, let's face it. It wasn't the smoothest of.
No.
There wasn't really progression made by Jaden Daniels in Tempe. I thought it'd get worse every year he was there. Got away from Tempe, away from that coaching staff, and
won a Heisman Trophy. And you've been hitting on this for a couple days. What you're hearing about Vegas and the fact that they might be hot and heavy after Jaden Daniels in this draft. Do they have the capital to pull it off? Do they have the wherewithal to do it? Dan Graziano's got more on that.
I do not believe that that is the case. I think he'll go, if Washington selects him at 2, I think he'll be happy to be number 2 and go there. I do think there's a relationship between Jaden Daniels and Antonio Pierce, the head coach of the Raiders. Antonio Pierce was on the Arizona State coaching staff under Herm Edwards when Jaden Daniels started his college career there, and they like each other a lot. I think they would both love for that to work out, but I also think they're both realistic. The Raiders don't have the ability to get up high enough to take him, most likely. If the Commanders were to take somebody else at 2, I believe the Patriots would get a call from the Raiders. The question is, could they offer enough?
Earlier in this process, too, we were talking about the relationship between Caleb Williams and Cliff Kingsbury, who's now the offensive coordinator with the Commanders. Would they make a play just to have that familiarity? There's those questions. By the way, I cringe every time I hear Antonio Pierce's name and Arizona State in the same sentence.
Uh-huh.
We didn't even touch on this. How about Antonio Pierce not cooperating with the findings of the NCAA? So his penalties coming later.
They have to have a separate penalties released.
Ugh. Can you just play ball a little bit, Antonio, and let Sun Devil fans get one ounce of closure on this stupid story?
And along those lines as well, if Herm Edwards was implicated by the NCAA as being a knowing participant in this, can you get that $4 million back from him and give it to Bobby Hurley's recruiting department?
Yeah, how about that?
That's like every time, just in that soundbite, Antonio Pierce, who was on Herm Edwards' coaching staff at ASU, and then I'm like, wow, what a staff. Whatever happened to those guys? What happened? Why are they still there?
Well, Herm Edwards received a show cause penalty of at least 3 years, so that's why he can't coach in college football right now.
Yeah, because everybody's knocking down his door.
Oh, yeah.
Be on the recruiting trail as we speak.
But did he really ever have a chance, Bick?
Yeah,
the whole story still makes me mad.
It makes me livid. Is what it makes me.
Yeah,
really does. And again, because who gets left holding all this? Just Kenny Dillingham. And
Restrictions on Kenny Dillingham, terrible. Who had nothing to do with anything.
The way the NCAA works and the glacial pace at which they move guarantee that the victims are going to be the current team, mm-hmm. and that the people who are responsible for it all, they're going to walk. They're mm-hmm. off into, they're off doing something else.
You're suffering as you wait for the ruling, and then you suffer further once the ruling is handed down and all of those people are gone already.
Coming up next, the 9 o'clock hour is upon us already. Time for some social studies with Sarah Cazell here on Bickley and Murata. Mornings live from the Akchian Community Studios on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Territorial Cup.